Good morning.
Good morning.
And I would also urge any of you who are new to Tergar as an organization to talk to Edwin or pick up the literature out on the table outside, because it's a wonderful organization. And as Edwin said, he lived in my part of the world in Massachusetts for like 20 years or something. And then Minjin Rinpoche, who is the founding teacher and kind of guiding light of Tergar International, said he wanted to set up headquarters in Minneapolis. That was a little bit mysterious to the rest of us. Okay. And poor Edwin and his wife moved here in the middle of a snowstorm. I think on both ends. So Massachusetts and Minneapolis. So it was quite a thing. But I've had a fantastic time here. I want to add that. And it's a wonderful city. It's a great place to be. Great, thriving. Wow, it's really fabulous. I haven't been here in 10 years, so it's quite something to just feel how much that energy has grown, and it's really fantastic. So this morning, this lovely man has been picking me up at my hotel, Clark, right?
Clark, his name? Yeah.
Clark has been picking me up at my hotel and bringing me here and dropping me off, and today he came and he said, "Oh, we're going to have a little bit of an adventure today." And I thought, well, that's always a bad sign. Somebody immediately couches the conversation with somebody that's supposed to make you feel better, but you don't know about what yet. So I said, oh. And he said, I couldn't get here in the car. I had to park two blocks away, and I had to weave my way through the marathoners in order to cross the street to get here. So I thought, okay, that's a little bit of an adventure. And I got ready to go, and we walked outside, and we walked down the block, and the street was totally clear. So I don't know if people were running on the way to the starting line, or there were barricades, but they were pulled aside, and the traffic was going, so it was like, it just disappeared. And he was very impressed. He said to me, "You parted the water." And I said, "I don't think so. I think the city had it planned somehow." It was just like, our timing was very good. And it was very good. So here we are. Then I wondered about all the rest of you, if you had unexpected adventures in getting here. Apparently not. What happened?
We were coming from 394, coming west, heading into downtown Lincoln, Minneapolis, we were on the interstate. And we came around the corner, and the Walker Art Center was there, and there was this just sea of colorful,
I'm slowing down,
But if anybody next year has the opportunity to be there at 8:22 in the morning,
That's so great. Okay, so why don't we begin with a sitting? Maybe we'll do a sitting, walking sitting. We'll have like a mini retreat within a retreat. And then go on. So we're going to talk more today about compassion and sympathetic joy and equanimity always. But one of the ways, compassion being the trembling or the quivering of the heart in response to seeing pain or suffering, sympathetic joy being taking delight in someone else's happiness rather than feeling so threatened by it or envious of it. And while each of these four actually has its own distinct method of meditation, if you choose to pursue it in that way, you can also, and more commonly, we bring them together. And we do them as one method, but bringing in the spirit and the nature of all of these qualities. Loving kindness and compassion, of course, are very close, but they're also a little different if one is resting, for example, on the basis of remembering that all beings want to be happy, the other, compassion, is more resting on that shared vulnerability we have, that there is suffering in life, or there's difficulty, there's challenge, there's certainly change. And we share that so that our hearts move in response to seeing somebody going through something. So more commonly we bring all of them together. Equanimity is always there because that's the bedrock of wisdom. It's the balance born of wisdom. And we can keep going within the framework of loving kindness, same phrases, for example, but bring in more of a flavor of compassion sometimes and more of a flavor of sympathetic joy sometimes, also depending on which recipient we choose. And so that's what we're going to do in this particular sitting. So once again, you can sit comfortably, close your eyes or not. Just be at ease. See if there's some phrases that work for you that are, as I said, good enough. They're the expression of the heart's energy. Phrases like, may I be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. It's the spirit of blessing. It's gift giving. Instead of obsessing one more time on everything we don't like about ourselves, we offer this gift. And the skill set is always the same. We rest our attention on an object of awareness. Our attention wanders. We get distracted. We get lost. We realize that. We practice letting go. And with forgiveness toward ourselves, we practice beginning again. We let go and we begin again. We start over. Again and again and again. In this case, we come back to the repetition of the phrases. Let that resting on the phrases guide you. You don't have to try to manufacture an emotion or make anything happen. Just rest. and repeat the phrases with enough space and enough silence so that it's a rhythm that's pleasing to you. This is like the song of the heart. I have a friend who said he thought he'd get extra credit if he said more phrases, so he used to say them really fast to get along. You don't have to do that. It's the complete, wholehearted gathering of all of our attention, all of our being on one phrase at a time. That's the practice. And then call to mind a benefactor, if there is someone that has inspired you or helped you, maybe helped you directly, helped pick you up when you've fallen down. Who is an embodiment of the force of loving kindness for you? An adult, a child, pet. Who makes you smile? If there's someone, you can bring them here. Get an image of them. Say their name to yourself. Get a feeling for their presence. And offer the phrases of loving kindness to them. Even if the words aren't perfect, it's okay. It's carrying the energy of the heart. It's carrying this way of paying attention, of regarding, of remembering. And think of a friend. We'll start with a friend who's doing pretty well right now. Here's the sympathetic joy. They may not be perfectly happy, but at least in some arena of life, they're enjoying success or good fortune. If someone like that comes to mind, bring them here. You can get an image of them, say their name to yourself, get a feeling for their presence, and offer the phrases of loving kindness to them. And then a friend who's not doing so well right now, who's experiencing difficulty or misfortune, bring them here. See what happens as you offer the phrases of loving kindness to them. And then everybody here, which involves a whole variety of different relationships. Those whom you know quite well, those whom you don't know at all, and yourself. May we be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. And all beings everywhere, all people, all creatures, all those in existence, near and far, known and unknown. May all beings be safe, be happy, be healthy, live with ease. Isn't that a nice way to start the day?
Yeah.
Or end the day. Or bring it to the middle of the day. Or do intermittently as you go up down the street. So we're going to do some walking meditation. I first just want to say a little bit about the hindrances. And basically it's just the recognition that as we practice, probably as we do any kind of introspection, as we center our attention, there's also a lot of disruption that happens. And it's inevitable. It's not a sign that you've done something wrong or that you're in the wrong course. It's what our minds do is that interpretation, like, everyone in the room is sitting here in bliss, but me, I'm the only one who's agitated or restless or sleepy, and they're not. I know they're sitting here bathed in brilliant white light. What color is that light supposed to be? Maybe it's golden, I forget. Some kind of color, but anyway, I don't have it, they have it, you know, and that's how we tend to hold these things. But in truth, it's natural and inevitable that in this kind of process, things come up. Grasping, desire, holding, jealousy, anger, aversion, fear, irritation, impatience, sleepiness, what's the sleepiness, sluggishness. We talked a little bit yesterday about sinking mind, that state where there's a fair amount of tranquility cooking but not enough energy to match it, that state I call the ooze, where you're just kind of oozing along, you know, that happens, or sometimes sleep. We enter into a day like this or a meditation session and we're pretty tired. And there it is, you know, that incredible fatigue is just revealing itself. There can be an awful lot of sleepiness that happens in meditation, and restlessness, anxiety, worry. What if they're still running at 5 o'clock, and I can't make my way back to the hotel, and, you know, what's going to happen? I have to get to the airport at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So, you know, our minds can do that, and just build that superstructure of what if, or when, which is even worse. When this happens, it's going to be really bad. And then doubt, an incredible doubt. Should I do this practice? Should I do that other practice? Well, those people seem more enlightened than these people, but then I know these people. I don't really know those people. If I knew those people as well as I knew these people, maybe they wouldn't seem so enlightened. Which way's faster? Which way's better? Or I can't do it. It's worked for 25, now 2,600 years, but it's hit a wall with me. You know? I don't have the right smarts, I don't have the right background, whatever it is, you know. There's so much turmoil that is coming up, and it's inevitable, it's okay. Because one of the main skills and freedoms we gain in the process is having a different relationship to those very things. The doubt, the anger, the fear, the desire, the grasping, the restlessness, the sleepiness. Instead of taking it so to heart and declaring, this is who I really am and all that I will ever be. Or, on the other side, getting into this battle, I hate this, I shouldn't have this, I've been meditating for over 40 years, this is a disgrace. What if anyone ever found out, you know? I'm still sitting here all restless, or I've spent, you know, $10,000 in therapy just in the last year. I shouldn't be angry anymore. Why is it still here? You know, so it's those two sides of things, getting submerged and overcome on the one side, and the dislike, the fear of a state, trying to deny it or push it away on the other side. And we say that the skill that we're developing kind of slices right down the middle of that, avoiding both those two extremes. To recognize what our experience is in the moment, to have some balance, which means recognizing this is a changing state. It's here, it's happening, and it's not forever. To take some interest in our state, which doesn't mean trying to figure out why in the world do I still feel this, but what's its flavor? What's its texture? What's its nature? Look at that sleepiness. And sometimes we see, wow, there's an awful lot of resistance in that sleepiness. Or we look at that desire and we see, wow, there's an awful lot of loneliness in that desire. So many things just get revealed when we're simply paying attention. And we have kindness toward ourselves in the face of these experiences. They're not bad, wrong, terrible. They're painful. They're painful if we get involved in them, if they overtake us. They're painful states. And that switch from bad and wrong and terrible to painful is the birth of compassion. So please don't worry in your practice, sitting, walking, like whatever you're doing, if you start to see the emergence of all of this. This is very fun and beautiful image from the teachings of the Buddha, where the Buddha said, the mind, your mind, my mind, is naturally radiant and pure. The mind is shining. It's because of visiting forces that we suffer. The mind is naturally radiant and pure. The mind is shining. It's because of visiting forces that we suffer. So I always love that image. Like, first of all, there's some very powerful implications in that. Those forces are just visiting. It's because of visiting forces that we suffer. Greed, grasping, hatred, fear. They're not essentially who we are. They're born out of conditions. They come and they go. They're visiting. They may visit a lot, but they're still just visiting. They're adventitious. They're not inherent to our being. And the Buddha didn't say it's because of visiting forces that you're a terrible human being. He said it's because of visiting forces that we suffer. But right from the first time I heard that image, I could see myself sitting happily at home, minding my own business, and I hear a knock at the door. And I go to open the door, and there's greed, or there's hatred, or there's jealousy, or fear, and I'd say, welcome home. And I'd fling the door open, and I forget who actually lives there. Or, as we so commonly do, I'm so freaked out at the appearance of this visitor, so ashamed, so upset, that I try to pretend that I never heard the knock, and I shut the door and just live in denial, only to discover that that very visitor then comes in through the window or down the chimney or something like that. So some great amount of the actual skill of meditation practice is, what do we do when we hear that knock? Can we open the door, be in recognition, which is mindfulness? This is what's appearing right now. This is what's visiting right now. Be in wisdom, which is remembering that it's just visiting. Have compassion. It's because of these forces that we suffer. That's the moment of transformation right there. And, you know, there are lots of ways of trying to describe that particular relationship of balance, of compassion, of tenderness, sometimes hospitality. You know, some teachers would say, well, invite that visitor in for a meal. Keep an eye on them so they don't have the road pass, they don't take over. But don't, you know, be all, like, terrified that they came. Invite them in for a meal. So I used that example at IMS once in Barrie when I was teaching. And someone in the room didn't like that. And here also there's an interesting question of balance. If your tendency is to be afraid and resistant and denying of those states, then inviting them in is a very interesting balancing practice. If your tendency is to be overcome, and lose a sense of centeredness or any spaciousness from it, then inviting them in is not exactly perhaps the right skillful means. You know, it's more like realizing that this is a visitor. I can let this go. So there are different ways. But anyway, I was using that example, and someone in the room didn't like it. So I said, well, how about inviting them in for a cup of tea? And they said, how about a cup of tea to go? Give them a cup of tea to go. Like, whatever image works for you, it's just some sensibility of, okay, this is what's happening in the moment. I don't have to, like, pull it in and let it fill me, and I also don't have to try to push it away. Okay? Everything will happen. It's all right. And then we have the primary object. We have the home base for our attention, which we can keep returning to. Sometimes it's the breath, sometimes it's something else. In this particular methodology, it's the phrase. It's the phrase of loving kindness. But there's also, you know, maybe the phrase is more in the background. There's more just a sense of connection. Or maybe the sense of the being who is the recipient, whether it's yourself or someone else. That's the most highlighted thing in a moment. And that's fine. You know, one of those three, the phrase, the image, or sense of the recipient, and the sense of the connection or the relatedness. I tend to like the phrase, as I keep describing myself in my own mind. The structure is useful for me. And another very good thing about the phrase, as I was saying yesterday, is that if you have a big tendency towards sleepiness in practice, and that state of sinking mind where you're just kind of oozing along, and you're doing something like loving kindness practice, because it is verbal and because it is active, the phrases themselves will tend to be garbled, and that's a good feedback system. I used one example yesterday. My favorite example is actually a friend of mine who's Swiss, which means English is his fourth language. And he came to IMS to sit, and he told me the story one day. He said his phrases were something like, may I be healthy and well, may I live with ease. And one day he got into that kind of sinking mind state, and he heard himself repeating, may I be wealthy in hell. And may I live with eels. But because English is his fourth language, he just kept repeating it. And then he stopped a moment. He thought, that sounds odd. So he kind of flipped all the way back to Swiss German and went, oh, that is odd. You know, but that's like a great feedback system, rather than kind of going along and oozing along for a good long time. So I like the phrases for many reasons as that kind of home base for our attention. Okay, the walking, again, you know, tends to be slightly different because it's a more complex activity. We're not sitting still. Eyes open, that's really good. And you can actually practice resting your gaze. Sometimes, well, I go back to a very beautiful quotation from this theologian, Howard Thurman, who said, look at the world with quiet eyes. Look at the world with quiet eyes, which I've always loved that phrase, because I think of it sometimes almost like those cartoon characters whose eyes are out on springs, you know, and it's like, just like, okay, relax. So eyes open, you can walk at a normal pace. It's the silent repetition of certain phrases. Often the phrases are fewer, just because it's a more complex activity. It might be just a couple, it's up to you. And it's a light attention resting on the phrase. It's like a touchstone. As you're walking along, you can be quite aware of everything going on around you, but you just have this resting point for your attention. And as I said yesterday, the way I like to do the walking meditation and loving kindness is I use as a baseline the phrases for myself. May I be happy, may I be peaceful. May I be happy, may I be peaceful. And then if somebody comes strongly into my consciousness, person walks by, I hear a dog, I hear a bird, I see a bug, I include them, like, oh, be happy. It's fun, it's playful, it's got elements of the unexpected, like maybe you're afraid of dogs, and it's a dog. So you watch your reaction. At the same time, you're extending, may be happy. Sometimes people will prefer to use just may all beings be happy, may all beings be peaceful as the baseline in the walking. It's really up to you.
Can you repeat the classical phrases?
The ones I used in Burma? May I be free from danger, which means both inner and outer danger. May I be free from mental suffering. May I be free from physical suffering. May I have ease of well-being, or may I live with ease. It's really the same.
Thank you.
Sure. Maybe we'll bring them back. It's like a retro movement.
I just had this. I had this aversion coming up yesterday with the phrases, so I want to try them.
Try these. And sometimes it takes a while, you know, to find the phrasing. That's fine.